The, I think somebody's in the wrong meeting. Or is she just watching? The meeting of the Early Childhood and Youth Development Committee will come to order. And somebody want to move the minutes? Representative Moran moves the minutes from March 6th. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carried. Thank you. Representative Breinert, you're the first bill. And so your move, House File 631, be passed and re-referred to the Committee on Higher Education Policy and Finance. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair. That's
Thank
the
you.
Motion.
Thank you. Representative Breinert, go ahead and present your bill.
Mr. Chair, before we begin, I have an author's amendment. It's the A1 amendment. It's very simple. It simply deletes the references only to children's mental health and just makes it a larger venue. All mental health professionals will be looked at, including children's.
Okay. All in favor of the A1 amendment to put it in the shape the author wants, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries. Okay. Thank you, Representative Breinert. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for hearing House File 631 tonight. If you recall, members, the first day that this committee met, we heard several presentations around children's mental health. In the course of our discussion around the need to expand school-based mental health grants, the question of availability of mental health professionals to fill these positions was raised. It was that discussion that led me to author this legislation. The federal action agenda for the President's New Freedom Commission states, mental health service delivery system can only be as good as the practitioners who staff it. Therefore, the Commission recommends making strong efforts to train, educate, recruit, retain, and enhance an ethnically, culturally, and linguistically competent mental health workforce throughout the country. Minnesota has had several work groups designed to address workforce issues, including the Minnesota Psychiatric Society Task Force, Minnesota Mental Health Action Group, and the Mental Health Acute Care Needs Report Force. Despite these efforts, little progress has been made. Lack of child and adolescent psychiatrists, mental health professionals, mental health practitioners, and other mental health workers available for consultation and ongoing treatment result in two identified consequences. First, the inability to access treatment. No openings, 2 to 4 months to obtain an appointment, etc. Second, higher caseloads for professionals. Both of these issues affect a child's or an adult's ability to access care when and where they need it. In reviewing a number of reports, it is clear that workforce issues have not changed much in the past 10 years. A series of hearings held in 1999 by the State Advisory Council found there was a shortage of mental health professionals in both the rural and urban areas, and this included a range of professionals, from psychiatrists to direct care staff in group homes. A key issue noted was that as more people live in and are treated in the community, there is a greater need for community mental health professionals to have additional training in order to meet more complex needs. A shortage of qualified personnel can lead to the use of professionals who are not specifically trained in mental health, high-cost alternatives, or poor quality care. A report issued by the Minnesota Council of Health Plans in 2008 found that more than 80% of the drugs used to treat mental illness in Minnesota are prescribed by primary care physicians in family practice, internal medicine, or OBGYNs. 20% are prescribed by psychiatrists. An inability to recruit psychiatrists or clinical nurse specialists into community programs creates an over-reliance on the most costly and intensive services in the system. Children's therapeutic services and support providers report difficulty even hiring behavioral aides. The Mental Health Acute Care Needs Task Force report contains survey results with several major themes. I'll just mention a couple of them. The two top consequences, as we noticed before, of workforce shortages across all types of facilities are longer waiting lists and higher caseloads. Recruiting psychiatrists and certified nurse specialists, nurse practitioners are the most challenging. This bill brings together the mental health community and the MNSCU system to examine this issue and develop a plan that will begin to address the workforce shortages in the mental health field. With that, I'll turn it over to Sue Abderholden, whom we all are very familiar with as an expert in this area. So, Ms. Abderholden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Sue Abderholden, for the record, from NAMI, Minnesota. I just want to say that it's, you know, not a surprise to anyone in this room that we have a very fragile mental health system. Many have heard about the long wait times to access a psychiatrist or other mental health professional, or the wait times in emergency rooms while waiting for an open bed, or people waiting in a hospital or Anoka Regional Treatment Center to go to a less intensive setting. While some of the problems can be related to the lack of availability of the right services, a lot of the problems can be traced back to the lack of workers. We simply do not have enough people to work in the mental health field, starting with psychiatrists all the way down to behavioral health aides. As the population in Minnesota becomes more diverse, the need for the mental health workforce to reflect the people of Minnesota increases. As the mental health system has begun to move towards evidence-based mental health treatment, best practices, and focus on recovery, the need for changes in the education and training of the mental health workforce has become clear. NAMI and the mental health community believe that we need to create a personnel development plan that addresses how to increase the number of people working in the field, how to improve their training and education, and how to increase the diversity of the workforce. We don't have to start from scratch. There's actually a national plan that we can look to build on. And there are also several states that have done a really great job of creating a workforce plan. And that includes Alaska, California, Connecticut, Missouri, North Dakota, Oklahoma, and Virginia, some states that where you would assume that they would also have problems recruiting people. NAMI believes we simply can't wait any longer. We can't wait for the shortages to get worse. This bill brings all the key stakeholders together so we can create and then follow a plan to finally address this issue. I want to just point out that this has the support of the entire mental health community, the Minnesota Hospital Association, and I just, before the hearing started, received an email from MACE, the Minnesota Administrators of Special Education, because they too see the need to have more mental health professionals and better training for teachers, particularly special ed teachers, on this very topic. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. And it must be Phyllis Wojcik?
That's correct.
Okay. I know you're not Steve Lipinski.
Thank you. I'm glad that.
Go ahead.
Chair Mallory and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to just briefly speak with you. I'm just going to do four points real quickly. I am Phyllis Wojcik, and I am Executive Director of ResCare Minnesota, a company based here in Minnesota. We provide services for adults with mental illness and developmental disabilities, both residentially and other supportive services. I'm here representing the Mental Health Providers Association of Minnesota, a coalition of providers throughout the state who provide similar services as our company does. I just want to reiterate exactly what Ms. Abderholden talked about. We are struggling as a provider organization, hiring, recruiting, and training qualified individuals. Turnover rates are high. Frequently, we will get individuals that come in at entry level. They see it as an entry-level position, get experience, and move on. Typically, our openings can take up to 2 to 3 months to fill. This slows the whole process of individuals we're able to serve and creates kind of a logjam in the system. We also struggle in recruiting individuals of diversity and communities of color. We probably get less than 5% of our applicants from the community of color, and we serve far more members that come for our services. I think the last point I'd just like to make is that many of the individuals that come to us with limited experience in evidence-based practices, and therefore a lot of times our energies are spent training that staff to get them up to where we want them to be in the services they provide.
Is that all?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Lipinski?
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Steve Lipinski. Excuse me. I'm the executive director at Washburn Center for Children. It's a 130-year-old nonprofit in Minnesota. This is one of the leading resources for providing services, community resources, providing services for children's mental health. We serve about 2,700 children a year from birth to adolescence, mostly in the metro area. We have three locations in Hennepin County, and we provide services in Dakota and Ramsey County, and we have 18 clinicians in school districts, or in schools in three different districts, Minneapolis, Bloomington, and Eden Prairie. Like most providers of children's mental health services, we're challenged by a number of workforce issues, and I'd like to highlight just four of them. To create just a brief context for understanding these issues, it's important to understand the business model that providers work within, which is a fee-for-service model that means service providers have to provide a certain number of billable hours, and then the money we get from that we use to pay our clinicians. It's also important to understand that many of the services that we get paid for, we don't get paid adequately for, and so most organizations like ours require some sort of subsidy from fundraising or an endowment or grants from counties or some other source, and these impact the workforce issues as well. We are generally one of the first sources of access, and we are accessing children into the least expensive part of the system, generally outpatient therapy. And when we have workforce issues that are unresolved, it means children and families are not accessed, if you will, at this point, and too often problems get worse and they're accessed when they are accessed into much more expensive and intensive services. The most significant problem we face, as has been alluded to, is just a general shortage of licensed children's mental health clinicians. We often have vacancies for months, especially if we want experienced staff or supervisory staff. There's been a lot of talk and is a lot of talk at the legislature about expanding school-based services, and there's strong support for that. You know, we get concerned that if the money was doubled and we could double the number of our school-based clinicians, that we would be just very challenged to find good people to put in schools. Even if there was interest in that. A second very significant issue is that employees do not come to us with adequate training to do the job that's required. While they generally have very good conceptual training and very good knowledge of child development and child clinical issues, they have often not had the training to do a good diagnostic assessment, develop a clear treatment plan, document the work they are doing. In addition, they have generally not been trained in specific evidence-based practices, and increasingly payers are expecting to pay for evidence-based practices. This means we spend considerable time on training in these areas, and the time that we spend on training means the clinicians are not doing billable hours seeing children. So it's a cyclical kind of issue. A third issue related to organizations such as Washburn is we as nonprofits, we are generally very challenged to compete with places like the county and school districts and sometimes health plans for limited numbers of licensed clinicians. So again, at the access point where we're trying to get children and family into services, staff and access is limited. The last issue is that training costs are not reimbursed in any way in our system, and with rates being inadequate, it means that training that's desired and needed just gets extremely limited. So again, organizations like us, well, we know we need to train people, and we do train them. We're challenged in being able to do that in a financially viable way. All of these issues, as has been indicated, are exacerbated when we talk about finding, hiring, and retaining clinicians who are people of color. The pool of candidates is small. There's competition for experienced clinicians. They're often recruited, and thus there's turnover. And in some communities, there are almost no licensed mental health professionals to serve that community. So I appreciate the opportunity to share these thoughts, and strongly would encourage any efforts that might begin to better resolve the workforce issues that confront providers of children's mental health services. Thank you.
Thank you. Stacy Englert? Okay. And Ron Brand? No? Okay, then I guess, does anybody else want to testify on this bill? Okay, would you step up? State your name and your connection or who you represent or whatever, or maybe yourself. Go ahead.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, representatives. I'm Dave Hartford. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Chemical and Mental Health Services for the Department of Human Services.
Thank you. Go ahead.
And thank you for this opportunity to speak in support of legislation for the Department of Human Services to collaborate with MNSCU in a summit to address comprehensive mental health workforce development, a mental health workforce plan for Minnesota. As the mental health authority for the state, our department welcomes this opportunity to further assess and plan for the needs of Minnesota's mental health system's future. As we continue to transform our system in the context of health care reform, this opportunity is well-timed and needed, as there is no workforce development plan for this population. We know we are in trouble in this area. We've done a lot of work in Minnesota in transforming our system and are really faced with continued transformation of our system. A few areas that need to continue the transformation: one, to development and delivery of a wide range of community-based services to support children and adults in their local communities needs to continue to transform. Also, increased target funding from the legislature and shifts from institutional fundings to our community-based options. We also need to focus on specialized populations. We have an increasingly diverse population, including many linguistically and culturally specific groups, adults with complex behavioral needs and co-occurring conditions, children with complex and co-occurring conditions, mental health first aid training, first episode of care for psychotic symptoms, and the list goes on. We have parts of our system that need continued development. One is prevention, early intervention, and the gaps in the current mental health system for children, subacute levels of care for both children and adults, community reintegration recovery supports, a variety of care coordination concepts, and also continued expansion of our crisis system, crisis response system. We have training needs for our workers that need to be enhanced, including meeting the needs of clients of diverse cultures, education on evidence-based practice, and other areas to strengthen the effectiveness of our service delivery. In conclusion, the summit proposed in this legislation will gather key stakeholders and educators across the state to plan the most effective approach to increase the number of mental health professionals and practitioners across the state. Currently, there is no workforce development plan. Research-based initiatives proven to enhance skill sets can further the knowledge and expertise to refine current services and enhance the effectiveness of service delivery for children and adults with behavioral health disorders. As the state authority on mental health, it's our responsibility to advance criteria and set standards with both to attract and sustain high-quality providers. As other testifiers have stated, there's many impacts that we knew we were already in trouble in terms of an aging workforce, in terms of an evolving workforce. The opportunities of healthcare reform and improving the system of care presents us with many opportunities that we may not be able to leverage if we don't continue to improve the numbers and quality of our workforce.
Representative Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm not sure who's this question, who wants to answer this question, but I've got a couple of questions. One is, what's the definition of children in the mental health field? Is it like 0 to 26? We've heard a bunch of varying discussions on when what we quantify as a child, and I guess I'm looking for, when we talk about mental health services, how do we quantify that?
Representative Briner?
Mr. Chair, well, first, I didn't know if Representative Howell was aware of the author's amendment in which we took the it's expanded to include adult services, not only children's. So, I mean, that doesn't mean you still don't want to ask one of the testifiers that question.
Well,
so you know, the summit is targeted at mental health services as a whole.
Well, and where I was going with it then is, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead,
thank you, Mr. Chair. So what I was really wondering is, is there different, because I've actually got a daughter that's looking to go into this field. So my question is as we look at this, is there different licensure for children as to the general population, or if you're licensed as a, you're licensed, I guess.
My name is Ron Brand. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Association of Community Mental Health Programs. For some specialties, psychiatry, clinical psychology, and licensed clinical social workers, nurse practitioners, clinical nurse specialists, highly trained mental health professionals, they tend to have a specialty in child mental health or adolescent mental health. Some people are licensed to practice more generally across adults and children, but there are specialties within children's mental health. And in our Mental Health Act within Minnesota, we define children as, you know, from 0 to age 21. I know insurance and other things may expand that beyond that, but it's age 0 to age 21.
Thank you. Representative Moran, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think this question is for anyone who can answer it. But so first, I just want to thank Representative Rayner for bringing this forward. And it's good to know that you want to increase, you know, to ensure that you're working to train, to have trained workers in the field doing the work, but also that you want to increase the number of culturally diverse mental health professionals and practitioners. I think that's a really great thing. So my question is, in order to increase the number of diverse community members who's going into that field, would that entails having members of the summit as diverse as, you know, those that you are seeking to include in that field?
Mr. Hartford, Mr. Chair, Representative, the idea, and I think that the idea of the summit, we recognize, I mean, many of us have been talking about workforce needs for quite some time, concerning culturally specific needs and a variety of these other needs, and we recognize that the summit needs to pull together all of the stakeholders, so all stakeholders can come together and develop a comprehensive plan. And as was earlier stated, there are roadmaps, national roadmaps, to help us with that, but the summit gives us inclusion of all of the needed bodies and stakeholder groups.
Ms. Abderholden, where are you going to?
If I just might add, you know, certainly the black psychologists, black social workers, we have organizations that reflect the diversity in our state, and they would absolutely all be included.
Okay.
Representative
Molina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to, I guess, any of the testifiers or Representative Reinhardt, I was just wondering, and I'm sorry if you mentioned this, but how you came up with this pretty expansive group of people, and if that kind of group has been convened before to sort of have a task force such as this.
Representative Reinhardt.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Moline. I'll make an attempt, and then Ms. Abderholden might be able to add more to that. But my understanding is a number of the groups that have been convened in the past included every group on this list with the exception of the Minsky system. So what's unique to this proposal is to bring to bear an educational organization who is actually focused on workforce development. You know, Minsky has done, as many of us are aware, a number of listening sessions around the state on workforce needs and shortage areas, and yet this is one that they haven't addressed yet. So I think they very quickly saw the wisdom of this proposal in terms of their own efforts to address workforce shortages. And with that, I'll let Ms. Abderholden, you've been with us enough these days to be join our forces. But if you'd like to add to that, at the chair's pleasure.
Ms. Abderholden, I can.
Mr. Chairman, Representative.
No, you turned it over, but.
The summit will kind of be, in a way, a major brainstorming session by bringing a lot more people together. And then the plan will be done by the staff of Minsky with, of course, you know, consulting with the various organizations. There won't be an official task force, you know, per se, like an appointed task force. But we haven't all come together with, again, as Representative Reiner said, with Minsky and with the university and community college, all of those folks, we haven't had those discussions, which is why, frankly, I think all of the other plans never went anywhere.
Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, we have just one more testifier who'd like to say a bit. You called his name, and then he didn't actually deliver his testimony.
Oh.
Mr. Chair, I had a few more questions on this point.
Sorry, Representative.
Representative Moline, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Briner, to the testifiers. Is there a certain number of representatives from each of these areas, or is it just one from each that will make up the summit, or is it undetermined? I'm just sort of wondering what it would look like.
Mr. Chairman,
Ms. Abderholden.
Representative, it's undetermined. In helping to develop a fiscal note, we were figuring there might be 100 people that would attend the summit. When we worked on the Mental Health Action Group, we had kind of a steering committee of about 30 people, but then we had subcommittees that brought in even more people, and probably all told there were about 100 people who were really involved in developing that particular action plan. So that's what we're assuming would be somewhere around there for a one-day summit.
Okay.
Thank you, Representative.
Where we would buy our own lunch.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and to Ms. Abderholden, does it take legislation to do this? I mean, couldn't these groups already come together and hold a summit and discuss these issues and come up with a plan and submit this on their own? Or is this something that requires legislation? Maybe Representative Briner knows. I know that sometimes especially our university systems don't do something unless we direct them to do so. Maybe that's what the idea is behind it, but I guess if you could explain that a little bit.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Briner.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Moline, what I would say about that is certainly Minsky could have initiated on its own a listening session and done some work in this area of workforce development, but they haven't. And because of the pressing need, we don't consider it optional, and we don't want to wait for their interests to be provoked. So the legislation is designed, as often legislation is, to prod a result. This is a long-term shortage. The last at least decade and further back, and so the need is severe. And on the one hand, and on the other hand, we're looking at funding a number of programs that will require more professionals in these fields. And we will put the money out there and open the positions and wonder who will fill them. And we don't want that to happen. So the summit has an urgency to it. So I'd say that's what's behind the legislation.
Okay, thank you. I'll let the next testifier come forward.
Representative Miranda, please.
So one of the things I was thinking, you have an impressive group of individuals who's going to be a part of the summit, and sometimes I realize that that's fine and that's great, but we're looking at the needs, how professionals would take care of individuals that includes family members, and sometimes we miss the basics like parents, who sometimes can bring some wisdom to the table around how professionals can best serve members of the family. Have you thought about including maybe parents and just community members in that summit?
Mr. Chairman?
Ms. Abderholden.
Representative Moran, absolutely. One of the things about NAMI, of course, is that, pretty much all the staff either have a mental illness or are a family member, including myself. So that is an important part. And, of course, one of the strategies that we already have talked about this session is, and that other states have looked at, is expanding your peer workers. So peer specialists who are adults who live with a mental illness and family peer specialists, so parents who have children with a mental illness working in the children's area in particular. So they would absolutely be a part of this. Especially, frankly, with NAMI being very active in helping organize it, I can assure you that.
Thank you.
Representative Lane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the early 90s, people who had gotten a master's degree in counseling were no longer able to get a licensure as an LP. I think that's one of the reasons we ended up with a long-term shortage of workers in this area. Are we interested in going back and making sure that these people have a path to licensure as a licensed psychologist?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lane, I think what we want to make sure of is that we have people who have the right training to carry out the treatment that we need. And, you know, I know it's been discussed over here in the past about whether it's physician assistants or wherever it is, saying we have a huge shortage. But no matter what, I want to make sure that the people who are treating, especially the children and adults who have the most serious mental illnesses, have the absolutely right training to be able to provide that treatment. There have been, over the last decade, many groups that have come together to try to make sure that there's similarities in terms of across all of those guilds. And that was a very difficult process that they all kind of agreed on. So I don't want to preclude what the answer will be as part of the summit, but everything will be on the table.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pam Myra.
Oh.
Over here.
Sorry.
I understand that there are many members from the public that have driven many hours to be here, and I am concerned that we're going to be able to hear their testimony. Will we be taking up House File 950 soon?
Yes, and like I said, Rip.
It stands with
me. Oh, yeah, obviously. Representative Meyer, yes, we're going to allow an hour and a half for that, and we'll take the testimony first at the beginning of that hour and a half. So, yes. And I don't see
Mr. Chair, we are at the call of the speaker, and so if I just would hate for these people to drive all the way and then for us to be called into session.
And yes, Representative Meyer, and if we get called in, then we're coming back for to finish out the hour and a half. We won't cut it short.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Reiner had another testifier as well, I believe.
Oh, okay. Is there another testifier? I'm sorry.
Oh,
the one that I called
Mr. Chair,
on?
There is, if it suits your, if you're willing to allow him a few minutes.
Okay.
Very
okay.
Short.
Thank you. I'm Ron Brand with the Association of Community Mental Health Programs. I provided a handout that you may have seen, and I really will, you know, cut my comments short. I know you have a busy agenda. There's many faces to this mental health workforce crisis, and it's something that we need to take a comprehensive look at. And we are competing for people who are sophomores in college and when they're deciding their majors. So it starts there, but it also includes all the other things that we've talked about. So it needs a comprehensive look that's looked across all cultures, and tries to think about the workforce for the future. Thank you.
So, seeing no further questions, Representative Breinert renews her motion that House File 631 be passed as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Higher Education Policy and Finance. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Nelson here. Yes, Representative Nelson, can you come down? Thank you. Representative Nelson, I just wanted to lay out for you the timeline we've laid out here. And I know I told you 20 minutes for your testifiers. I'm allowing the other side 25 instead of 20, so I'll allow you 25 also. So you can just quickly go through your bill in a couple minutes or something like that. And then we'll start your testimony, and then we'll take their testimony, and then we'll have a few minutes of questions, but I want to reserve, and I'll talk in the meantime to the lead as to how much time they think they need for amendments, because I want to make sure we have time for those. So that's the way. I just wanted to let you know that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson, the chair will move House File 950, and that goes to the Labor Committee, whatever the rest of that title is.
I believe it has to go to, the Labor Committee, correct.
Right. It's got some, everything.
Other bills in my head that I'm thinking about, it goes to the Labor Committee, yes, is my understanding.
Whatever the name of it is. Okay, and Representative Nelson, you have the DE1 amendment, is it correct?
And Mr. Chair, the DE1 amendment, if you could put that on, that would be...
Okay, to get in the shape that I want.
Get in the shape I need it, yep.
Okay, the chair will offer the DE1 amendment to get in the shape the author wants.
Mr. Chair, there's a slight modification, if you could, to the DE1 amendment on page 2.11. Or on page 2, lines 2.11 and 2.12. Can we delete those? Modify that so those delete those out of the bill.
Okay. So the chair will move deletion of 2.11 and 2.12 to put the DE1 amendment in the shape that he wants, and that as the bill, correct?
Correct.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries. Then you have the...
And I also have the A1 amendment for the DE1.
And where is that? It'd be nice if these were in order. Do you have the A1? Well, it wasn't in mine. Okay, thank you. It would be nice if the chair got the amendment.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, if I can explain what this does.
Representative Nelson, in this committee, we just put them in the shape that the author wants. So the chair will move the A1 to get it in the shape that the author wants. And Mark Shepard wanted to, and you also have one letter someplace directing issued to issues. Where is that?
Mr. Chair and members, just because of the last amendment deleted subdivision 2, the cross-references in the A1 amendment are going to change. Everything's going to be renumbered. So if you look in the A1 amendment, in multiple places, it refers to subdivision 5, paragraph C, and all of those, because the subdivisions are going to get renumbered, those should all be subdivision 4, paragraph C now. So I'll note that, and I just wanted to bring it to everyone's attention.
Thank you.
Excuse me, Chair Mullery.
Representative Creason.
Thank you. Just a comment. We seem awful rushed here, and this is a very important bill. I know there's a lot of people here, but I just a comment. I mean, with all the shuffle and everything, this seems like this could be too quick.
Representative Creason, we've got an hour and a half. We'll this is the way we've gone for my 4 years as chair before and all the time this year. We put it in the shape the author wants. Then we discuss it. And I believe there's one more. Mr. Shepard found a typo, and I can't remember.
Mr. Chair, on the A1 amendment, page 1, line 22, the word issued, second to the last word, should be issues. So we'll just note that. Just wanted to let you know.
So can Mr. Shepard, you're the expert on procedure. Can Representative Nelson just include... I'll include that in my motion then. So this is just to get it in the shape that the author wants, then we can discuss it.
Mr. Chair, could that be repeated again, please?
Oh, sure. On line 1.22, the word issued would be changed to issues. Just the D.
Thank you.
Thank you. So all in favor of putting the shape the author wants, say aye. All opposed, no. Okay, now we can discuss your bill, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And what this, you know, you got the bill in front of you, and looking at the wrong. But we're going to ask, why are we here with this bill?
Representative Nelson, I was just going to state that at this point, now I'll consider it discussion for your side.
Okay. So. Why are we here? 2 years ago, Governor Dayton, in attempting to allow people to meet and try and form a union, signed an executive order that was struck down by the courts. And even though I support unions and support the purpose of what he was trying to do, it was the correct ruling by the courts. And in the court's ruling, they stated basically that the governor was overreaching his powers as to do this, that to get this done, and I'll read what the court said. The governor cannot unilaterally set a clear and articulated and affirmatively expressed state policy like this. And accordingly, only the legislature has the power to make law and determine the expediency of its enactment. So basically, what the governor was overstepping his bounds and stepping on legislative powers. So that's why we're here with a bill to give these people the right to be able to meet and form a union if they choose. And I say it that way because what this bill does and what it doesn't do, there's a lot of misconceptions out there about what it does and what it doesn't do. Some of the things that it doesn't do, it doesn't tell parents or providers how to raise their kids or take care of their kids. It doesn't do that. It doesn't guarantee that a union will be formed. Or it doesn't form a state union. It doesn't do that. And it doesn't force anyone to join a union. What it does do, it allows those interested parties who choose to join together and to raise their collective voices to work to raise the quality and standards of their chosen profession. And how are they going to do that? They're going to do it through discussions of best practices. They're going to do it through attempting to get the state to raise reimbursement rates. And they're going to do it, it's going to allow the interested parties that want to do this to pursue the formation of a union. So that's what it does. There's no guarantee, and anyone that's ever done union organizing, and I was a business agent for the carpenters, and I did lots of organizing and tried to organize contractors and companies. The union can't do that for these people. They have to do it for themselves. All we're doing is giving them the opportunity by a slight change in state law to be able to do that. And so that's why we're here, and that's what the bill is about. And we've got testifiers for the bill, and I think you've got the list of those, Mr. Chair. So if you want to...
Okay, then Representative Nelson, I guess the first... And as I said, you get 25 minutes instead of the 20 that I had cut you to before. So is it Eric Leto?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Chair Mullery and members of the committee, my name is Eric Leto, and I am the Chief of Staff for AFSCME Council 5. This legislation matters to AFSCME and to all working families. It's about the simple human right to choose whether or not to have a union and to have a voice on the job. This is the same way that teachers, nurses, social workers have organized across the state of Minnesota for decades, and child care providers deserve nothing less. Child care providers are uniting to advocate for quality care that parents can afford. We share common interests with the legislature. First, all of us want to give working parents peace of mind that their kids are healthy, learning, and safe in the care of a well-trained professional. Secondly, we all want to prepare kids for success in school and life. Thirdly, we all want to improve quality and affordability for families. And fourthly, we all should want to stabilize this profession and reduce turnover by giving providers a stronger voice in the decisions that affect their work. 16 states have recognized the right of child care providers to bargain collectively with the state. There's nothing stopping Minnesota. Union providers have helped their other states improve training, provide more consistent care with less turnover, increase quality and affordability for families, and ensure on-time payments for providers from the state. Collective bargaining is really a partnership. It's a partnership that will help the state maximize the investment in helping working parents have access to quality, affordable child care. With your support, home-based providers can help the children in their care be ready for kindergarten and success in life. Child care providers deserve respect for doing one of the toughest and most important jobs imaginable, helping to raise our children. Often, they are the only ones who hear a child's first word and sees their first step. They become part of the family. And today, you will hear testimony from several members of child care providers together. They are professionals who are experienced, smart, dedicated, and loving. They want a union, and they've been struggling 8 years to have one. Today, they need your help. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Nelson, do I just go down the list?
If you would, please. Yeah, I don't have those in front of me.
Okay. Lynn Barton? Who's that?
Hello, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Ms. Barton, and just
Say your name for the
Say your name.
My name is Lynn Barton, and I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for holding
Let me just interrupt. Just to be so that we don't have arguments about fairness, the questions will all come at the end so that they'll get 25 and then the other get 25 uninterrupted and then we can have questions.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Thank
Barton,
you, Mr.
go
Chair.
Ahead.
Yes, I want to thank you for holding this meeting at a special time so I could get here. It's kind of difficult being in family child care to get away, but this is an important issue to me. My name is Lynn Barton, and I've been a licensed family child care provider for the last 14 years, and I've provided licensed care in both Polk and Douglas County. It's critical work that child care providers do every day to care for the most vulnerable young children in our communities. I believe there is no job in the world more important than ours. Caring for the future, helping parents create the strong foundation for children to live successful lives. I love the children in my care, almost like my own, and I want what's best for them and what's best for me. I'm a successful, competent child care provider, and I want to be part of a child care union. I would like organized representation on state policies affecting my work. As a child care provider, I'm so proud of what I do. I prepare the children for school, but that means more than teaching them ABCs. I provide proper nutrition, the opportunities to develop large and small motor skills, indoors and outdoors. Home family child care naturally provides opportunities for children to learn social skills and to learn to get along with one another. Getting along with one another and knowing how to manage one's behavior in a group is critical to good school adjustment. I engage all the children in conversation and literature, so they'll be more likely to respond and use language in the appropriate manner. I'm always trying to make my program better, and the union helps me with that. The union does not tell me how to run my business. They assist me in with my business, making it successful by being there when I ask for help. The child care union is so much more than money. The union is exactly as the word is. It is bringing child care providers together. A child care union represents the culture, diversity, and concerns from child care providers from across the state of Minnesota, not just the metro area or an area of the state with a strong advocacy group. A union gives providers the opportunity to have so much more than they can get on their own. The opportunity of talking and sharing with coworkers while still being a personal business and making our own decisions for the success of our business. A child care union provides the opportunity to increase the quality of providers by supporting them with affordable, accessible training. The opportunity to be given fair rules that are understood and enforced equally. The opportunity to of affordable insurance and benefits. The union also helps providers be recognized as professionals by the communities they live in and the state of Minnesota. Child care providers are uniting to provide quality child care that parents can afford. Please support the Child Care Collective Bargaining Act. Ensure this happens. Kids benefit, families benefit, child care providers benefit, business benefit, and Minnesota will benefit. Thank you for hearing me.
Oh, thank you. Arlena, Blake. Thank you, Ms. Blake. You know the routine by now.
Sorta. Well, good evening, everyone, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you for giving us this opportunity to speak to you about our child care bill. And today I'm here to tell you why I would like the union.
And the union.
And
you need to state your name.
Okay, my name is Marlena Blake, and I'm a child care provider in North Minneapolis, and I've been providing child care services for over 10 years. To families who are receiving child care assistance and to families who are not. I want to be a part of the union because it helps providers to better prepare children for school. We do lots and lots of activities, but I think one of the biggest things that we do is to conduct ongoing observations of the children as they come through a daycare. And so whatever minor issues that children might be facing, we can have an early intervention services for them and offer them resources and offer families resources. We create a safe, comfortable, nurturing environment. I love my daycare. and I've said it so many times. I have my degree in family social science. I also have a degree in education from Concordia College. And most of my friends say, Marlena, why did you decide to do daycare? And I said, wow. And I said, well, why? And they'd say, well, what about your background, all of the education that you've gotten? You went to school and pay all those loans for your education, and now you're doing childcare. And I just looked like, wow, you have really missed the boat. Because we need qualified professional people to care for our children. That is our most prized asset. And I would often tell all my friends that I could pay no one any amount of money to take care of my children because they are priceless to me. And that is how I run my daycare. The children have plenty of good times, plenty of activities to keep them involved and engaged. And as I said, we create a safe environment. Children learn how to share, to play, how to express themselves, how to own their own feelings, that they are valuable in theirs, and we respect them, and they also learn to respect themselves and respect others. And I think that's one of the biggest thing in my daycare that I find very interesting and very important, is that I want all the children to feel like they can take on anything, that they feel really, really good about themselves. And I know for an individual, if I feel good about myself, then I feel like I can do anything, and that is my whole philosophy. We involve children in meaningful experiences, learning experiences, so that they have a strong foundation for early literacy. And preparing children for school is not just about teaching them the ABCs or how to read or write. It's about being able to sit in group time for a few minutes. It's to give them choices about what they would like to learn. It's to build on what they like, what they already know, and what they'd like to do. So there are many, many different aspects of preparing children for school, and we do certainly meet those needs for children and families. I have had the opportunity to work with parents in helping them to choose a school that their children would like to go to. And so we look at the lifestyle of the families. Do they stay up late? Do they get up early? And also the temperament of the child. So we can find a good fit of school that would meet the needs of those families. I could go on and on, but I won't. I think that it's very important to have a union. Currently, we in Minneapolis, we don't have an association. And we meet independently, informally. A small group of providers meet together the third Saturday of every month, and we just talk about the issues that we are addressing, how to help each other, how to find that support for parents, and we share information and resources, and we make connections. And currently, if we have a union that has the support and bargaining rights, we might be able to get some additional funding or resources to continue and to build that connection in North Minneapolis. A lot of us are very, very isolated, and we really depend on other people and other support around our business to help us and to give us peer mentoring and some information as we need it. Another reason why I think the union is great, it's great for parents, because in this case, parents will win every time, because we're providing quality, safe, affordable childcare to parents. They really, really love it. They really value what we offer to them. And usually I am at work before the parents go to work, because they're bringing me the children before they go to work. And I'm still at work when they come back from their job. I know parents really value that. And we really need to support childcare providers for the great, great work that we're doing. In closing, we are great Minnesotans, right? In Minnesota, we do what is right. We help each other. We help our neighbors. We help children. we find support wherever we need it. When times are hard, we stick together and we get things done. Please, I'm asking you to support us. Support our union is a support for Minnesota children and families. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Blake. Stacy Englert? Go ahead, Ms. Englert.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stacy Englert, and I'm the mother of Dylan and 7-week-old Cullen. Thanks for allowing me the opportunity to testify today in support of House File 950. My son Dylan is 4 years old, and every day I drop him off at my child care provider's house before I start my day. My provider is a nurturing individual and someone who I have complete trust in. Her home is a welcoming and safe environment, which makes it that much easier to leave my children with her. I'm grateful she has the necessary training to keep Dylan safe, that she understands the rules and regulations to ensure she's operating within the laws governing her business, and that she's giving him the learning environment that's right for him. And when I can trust her and know she's doing the best she can, I can focus my time on being good at my job. Basically, if she's not there, I can't go to work. If I can't go to work, I can't provide for my family. So her well-being is indeed my well-being and my children's. I know when workers have the opportunity to come together with a common voice, so much more could be accomplished in the best interest of providers, which is in the best interest of parents, and in the best interest of kids. This is exactly why I support the rights of family child care providers to collectively bargain with the state for Dylan and Cullen. Being in a union means recognizing the voice that workers have together and honoring that recognition to lift the profession, which I know is sorely needed. In other states, organized child care providers have seen increased reimbursement rates, better training, and even health care negotiated. Knowing there's a collective voice means providers don't have to worry as much about the costs of running a business. And then they can not only better care for our children, they can invest in safer and better homes, and they can even pass those savings on to me. Child care is a massive cost to parents, as we know. I pay almost $6,000 a year, and in a few weeks that will double when my infant starts and I go back to work. So anything that can be done to bring my costs down is huge, and that ultimately gives parents more choices. I want the best quality at the most affordable price in the setting that is most appropriate for my kids, because ultimately that's what this is about. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Representative Nelson, you have 5 more minutes, and the next one is Carla Skapansky.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would like to thank you for this opportunity to testify today. My name is Carla Skapansky, and I am a licensed family child care provider in Benton County. In my almost 15 years of doing child care for families in my area, my husband and I have also raised 4 children of our own. We both are independent business owners. My husband is runs our family dairy farm, where he milks 90 head and raises approximately 400 animals. Teachers in schools have cornered me and asked me what children are in my daycare so that they can separate them when they go into the school system. When they enter kindergarten, my children who come out of my daycare are already reading. They want to put them in their classrooms so that they have role models in their classrooms. Then they can have their ones that are struggling, have people to help them out. I also have a 4-year-old this last year that I'm pretty proud of, who entered kindergarten at the age of 4 because of her advanced cognitive skills. I take pride in my job. That is why I'm here today, because I'm searching out to be a mentor for my child care providers together, individuals that are also part of the union. I find that they share my values and how important it is to have quality care for children. I go knocking on doors, and I find they share my values and how important it is for them to continue in this profession.
I love my job and children and the children, and this is why this May I'm going to be continuing my profession as a legally unlicensed daycare provider. With this title, I can continue my journey of providing quality care, provide excellent meals, and go over and above in the academic area with the children without a license. Parents in my care are so happy that I still will be caring for their children. How does this all tie together with the importance of having the right to collectively bargain to improve the child care program and benefit me as a provider and the children I care for? It is the ability to relax and concentrate on what is important. It's the children. Everyone wants their daycare children to stand out as being excellent when they enter into the school system. My concern is, are we going to be able to continue this in the next generation? When going from county to county, talking to daycare providers, they are not worried about tomorrow because they are way too busy putting in their 14 to 16 hour day to have time to think about it. The ongoing answer to the future of daycare is, oh well, I can always quit. These are amazing providers, and when these wonderful ladies across the state feel that when the going gets tough, they want to just hang up the towel, this is unacceptable to me. There are other answers, and I am here to say today that my going legally unlicensed is going to be amazing, and it will allow me to continue care with the same quality insurance to my parents that I have in the past. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kapansky. Marty Bragg? And you've only got 2 minutes.
So. To the chair and members of the committee, I want to thank you for this opportunity to be able to testify today and to be able to share about my profession. My name is Marty Bragg. I'm a licensed family child care provider in Hennepin County, Brooklyn Center. I have worked in the field of early childhood education for over 27 years, both in child care centers and operating my own business. I currently care for 5 full-time children, 5 part-time children, and 1 of my own, which allows 14 parents the ability to safely leave their children in my care so that they can go to work and school every day. I am an educator. I am preparing these children to be ready for kindergarten as they learn to wash their hands properly, use the potty, eat healthy foods, learn colors, numbers, letters, and learn how to put on snow pants, boots, mittens, and learn to love our beautiful Minnesota winters. During the last 10 years, I have had hundreds of hours of in-service training, college work, and completed my CDA. During this same time period, the CCAP payments for providers that providers depend on, and some providers only have CCAP families, has not increased. In fact, it has even decreased. The increase in my quality of care does not reflect in the pay rate for CCAP. While I can charge parents what I choose, I do keep my rates around that of the CCAP rate so that my families, especially lower income parents, do not get stuck with a huge rate differential along with their parent fees. Many parents are struggling, but in hard economic times, the very poor are hit first and hit the hardest. And I will not turn families away. As for benefits in my profession, besides personal satisfaction, there are none. No health benefits, retirement, or higher pay for more education. These are things that I only dream about. The Family Child Care Collective Bargaining Act calls these issues of mutual concern. This act would allow providers to sit down with representation and meet the state with these concerns. Currently, I have no say in these matters and no representation. There was a time when public school teachers had no health insurance, retirement, or higher pay as their education increased. Teachers' unions changed this. I can afford some of these things on my own, but with a union and larger pool of providers together, we could have what teachers have. I am an educator, too. Besides parents, I am second in line in preparing these children for school and preparing them for life. What I do is essential to families in Minnesota. Now teachers have these benefits in place, making their work environments a place to concentrate on the education of kids rather than worrying about making a living. I spend a lot of my time currently just trying to make a living. With the right to collectively bargain and negotiate benefits that make my profession better, I can dedicate my time to ensuring that all my children's parents can go to work every day.
You're over.
Okay.
About 20 seconds. So
okay.
You're finished. Sorry.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're doing it with both sides. So. Okay. Representative Myra, do you want to just have them go up and announce their name then?
Or? Mr. Chair, that's what we're doing.
Okay.
Thank you.
Would somebody come up? Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
However you want to organize. Okay, then we'll start now. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, committee, hello and thank you for this opportunity. My name is Vicki Schaffner. I'm here representing the Minnesota Licensed Family Child Care Association. We're an affiliate to the National Association for Family Child Care. MLFCCA opposes this bill, but we will support the outcome of a majority vote of the nearly 11,000 licensed family child care providers. And I'm sorry, I didn't get all of the amendments beforehand, so I'm going off what the material we had before. But what I had is that the bill had stated under Subdivision 4 that a family child care provider means an individual either licensed or unlicensed who provides family child care services. This would exclude over half of the providers from voting, many of whom are willing and registered to accept CCAP payments from the state. A fair union election allows all licensed family child care providers to vote, regardless of whether or not they accept or have accepted CCAP payments in the past. MLFCCA is sending a survey to all licensed providers, and we will have the results for you next week.
Thank you.
Unlicensed providers are not held accountable to state licensing standards and laws, nor is child care their chosen profession. Therefore, licensed and unlicensed providers should be separated from a vote to unionize and have a separate union if that is the case. The bill also states that the union can negotiate on issues outside of CCAP reimbursement rates. Allowing unlicensed providers to vote for an organization that will affect regulations, grievance procedures, and other issues for licensed providers is not an equitable representation. A union is not qualified to determine quality standards for children and professional development needs of providers. Organizations that have years of experience in these areas need to maintain the right to be at the table. In Michigan and Illinois, the number of unlicensed providers eligible to vote was 3 to 5 times higher than the licensed providers. Even if every licensed provider voted no, the unlicensed vote would have determined unionization for licensed providers. MLFCCA asks that all licensed providers be given the opportunity to vote. MLFCCA also sees conflicting interests in a union that will represent both child care licensing staff and family child care providers. We ask, how can a union represent both sides of the arbitration table? Providers should have the right to join or not join any organization to represent them, and that organization should have an equitable seat at the table for negotiating issues impacting licensed providers. We also have concerns regarding the certification process. MLFCCA has maintained written records submitted to Governor Dayton of numerous provider complaints about the card collecting campaign and deceptive practices used to gain a signature. Additionally, due to high turnover rates in unlicensed care, many of the eligible unlicensed caregivers may no longer be providing care. Allowing cards unsigned or signed by unlicensed providers is not an indication of support among the licensed family child care professionals. Cards signed by unlicensed providers should not be counted as such. Due to the fluidity of families enrolling in the CCAP, how will union membership and representation be determined and maintained? A child may only be in care setting for 1 week. Is union representation and membership only going to be for 1 week? While the union states that membership in the union is voluntary, if there is a family child care providers union, representation will not be voluntary. For this reason, and because any contract negotiated with the union will impact all licensed providers should have the opportunity to vote. MLFCCA will support the outcome of the true majority of all licensed providers and only licensed providers. It is imperative that licensed providers are heard on this issue. We thank the committee for holding this hearing at 5:30, but still that is before most family providers have even closed for the day. Holding committee hearings in the evenings and during the weekends, allowing providers to attend, is essential for hearing directly from those impacted by this legislation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Schaffner. Whoever is next. Yeah, good idea. Have everybody ready to move quickly.
We'll be fair.
Go ahead. Just name and then go ahead.
My name is Julie Seidel. I have been a self-employed business owner as a licensed child care provider for over 10 years now. The first thing that I would like to say is that we need to remember this is not just about unionization and CCAP reimbursements. This is about the children in our care, and that has been forgotten. I adamantly oppose Bill HF950. I am self-employed. I am not a state employee. If I wanted to be somebody's employee, I would still be working at Anoka County that I left over 10 years ago. I have chosen this profession because this is what I want to do. I take care of children, I give them love, nurturing, and education, and I do not need the assistance from a union to do this. It has taken the union 8 years to find 57 providers to sign up out of the 11,000 licensed family child care providers. Mm-hmm. This alone should tell you that licensed family child care providers do not want to be unionized. The union is stating they will improve care, stabilize costs by lowering providers' costs, and obtaining larger CCAP reimbursements, thus lowering daycare costs for parents. But yet the union has not stated how they would actually do this. I obtained training in several areas such as health, safety, and nutrition, growth and child development, learning environment and curriculum, assessment and planning for individual needs, family and communities, and interactions with children. These trainings are readily available through Think Small, CCRNR, local daycare associations, and online through Minnesota Center for Professional Development. I am also currently enrolled in the new Parent Aware Rating Program. This is a rating system currently in place for licensed family child care providers. This is all enhancing my professional standards and improving upon the care I already give to the children. This is what you do as a self-employed business owner. I do not need a union to help me do this. The union claims they will help lower costs for providers, which will in turn lower costs for child care for parents. How will the union make this happen? Will they go to Cub and Costco and tell them I need a discount for the more than $7,000 I spend a year on my food and household expenses? Will they get me discounts on my utility bills, my liability insurance, curriculums, or crafts? These are the largest costs I have for my daycare business. I have found ways on my own to lower my costs by buying in bulk, shopping around for the best insurance, and stocking up on crafts and curriculum when items go on sale. This is what you do when you run your own business to lower your costs. I do not need a union to help me do this. Please remember, by voting yes, you will not be only affecting more than 11,000 licensed family child care providers, but also the approximately 170,000 plus families that use family child care providers. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next. Just to save time, state your name and go ahead.
Wanda Tepley, and I come to you as an anomaly. I'm not a health care provider. I am an anesthetist by trade. But most importantly, I'm a woman, a wife, a mother, and I lost my earring, a grandmother, and a consumer. I am here to represent my daughter and son-in-law because they can't be here. They're at home with their children. And the most important thing is that through their daycare provider, they have had exemplary and loving care. As an anesthetist and an administrator in the healthcare facility, I have my healthcare master's and I have my business master's. So I've asked myself, what value would a union bring to an organization such as this? A value-added proposition that I just cannot see. When you look at over 99.99% of the daycare providers do not want to be unionized. They are providing this type of service without the help of a union. I was struck by the comments that came across by the group. They talked about the wonderful care they gave. I still add, what is a union going to bring to them? In the discussions, they have talked about providing health care coverage. It seems to me that many of these providers have health care coverage on their own, and if the news is to be believed, we'll soon have Affordable Care Act enacted, and so we will have a safety net. So I really wonder how long health care coverage can be an issue. Training, I've not seen the training as an issue. I have seen my grandchildren grow up in an exemplary environment, fueled by the Think Small group, the providers that get together and share all their initiatives. I actually watch their Facebook page every day wishing that I could go and make some of the crafts. Honest to goodness, these make some of the crafts. Honest to goodness, these daycare providers are incredible. So really, do we need this duplication of service? The liaison with the union is really not needed. Many of these providers already are functional with the HLFCA and the MLFCCA. They provide the advocation through the legislature. So let's look at what is the ultimate impact to my children. It's going to increase the costs. Definitely, each provider will have to raise their rates, which will mean less children will be there, and this will decrease access for parents. Right now, in my children's situation, they pay $40,000. They're paid $40,000 approximate take-home pay of $32,000. They pay $17,000 a year in child care. Let's look at the economic impact. There is no way that they can afford to have additional costs put on there, which we all know historically unions will provide with their additional costs. Also, economically, the environment is bleak enough that employers are looking at cutting many full-time workers, cutting them down to a part-time status. That will further their income. That doesn't decrease their help, their child care costs. That just makes their affordable income a lot less. So, in conclusion, when I look at it from a purely economic standpoint, am I getting any value-added service from a union facility? And I strongly believe not. I hope that you will take your grandmother's word for this. And lastly, I have to say that I really would like to look at each one of these daycare providers as an independent business owner and not as a public employee. That's a very slippery slope. So thank you very much for the ability to testify.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tepley.
Hello. We've met before. Good evening. My name is Becky Swanson. I'm a child care provider in Lakeville, Minnesota. And the reason I'm here tonight is basically I want to cover a few things that I think are very, very important. The CCAP money. We really need to understand is the CCAP money is set by legislators. It's not set by the union and it's not set by us. So CCAP money is already within your control of what is going to be acceptable as the CCAP reimbursement amounts. The other thing, as far as the rules and regulations that we have to go by, are also set by you. So the union is not a necessary unity for us in order to have rules and regulations set. We already have organizations that lobby for us. So I wanted to make those things clear. The other thing is this has been a long process to get to where we are today. 8 years this has been going on from the first time the unions came and knocked at my door. Over this time, I have felt bullied, pushed around, not listened to, invisible, and now I'm here at the legislature. I still feel I'm not listened to and I'm not being seen. I'm a small business owner. We care about what we do. I believe every one of these other women who spoke tonight who want to be unionized are very good quality child care providers, as everyone over here who does not want to be unionized. The issue is the union doesn't offer us anything we don't already have. We are small business. I'm sorry, I'm not a worker of the state. If I was a worker of the state, I'd have one heck of a pension plan. But I'm not. And I chose my occupation very closely. And the reason we have turnover is not everybody is qualified to take care of children. Nor do when they decide that they think that they want to be a stay-at-home mom and taking in a few kids, they don't understand the responsibility. These women and these women do. We love our profession. We love what we do. But please, let's look at the fact that we already have all the organizations in place, mentoring programs in place, which many of these ladies are going to cover very extensively to you. We're small business. I don't work for you. So, and I don't work for the union. So I choose that I don't want to be put in that package of having to choose. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Hello.
Go ahead. Hi.
Hi, my name is Holly Sable. Good evening. My name is Holly Sable. I've been a licensed family child care provider for the past 8 years. I'm also a trainer for early childhood professionals, a consultant, a mentor, and I'm currently working on my master's in early childhood. I'm here to urge you to vote against this awful bill. Sorry. Licensed family child care providers have fought against child care unionization for the past 8 years, especially in the past two. And we've overwhelmingly proved that we are against this. I don't understand why our legislators and the unions are not listening to us. We are independent, self-employed small business owners. We are certainly not employees of the state. Many family child care providers employ assistants of their own, and federal laws explicitly prohibit employers from unionizing. Every day we make positive differences in the lives of Minnesota families, all without a union.
Some legislators and paid union representatives have implied that we need to be unionized to be, quote, high quality and to, quote, do our jobs well. If you look around this room, you will see a very small representation of the awesome family child care providers we have in Minnesota. We've been working with children without a union for many years, many people more than 20, and we will continue to do so without a union. What makes us any different than grocery stores that accept food stamps, from dentists, doctors, chiropractors who accept Medicare, independent construction workers that do bids for government? What makes them any different than us? I think you're setting a very dangerous precedent. I've also brought a copy of that wonderful document, the Declaration of Independence, and the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. I think some people need a refresher course on it. And I'm sorry if that sounds really pointed, but it seems to have been forgotten by the people whose only power comes from the consent of the governed. And the people have said that they do not want to be unionized. The Constitution explicitly forbids some of these provisions in this bill, which violate the 14th Amendment for equal protection. This bill would create a law that would, quote, abridge the privileges of citizens in the United States by allowing a minority to decide for the majority. It treats licensed family child care providers who do not receive CCAP funds differently than those who do. It limits the freedoms of providers who may, but do not currently, enroll families on CCAP, and it denies equal rights to providers who never will. The things the union wants to negotiate with the state with will affect all providers, not just the union members, and not just the providers with children in CCAP. Let's see. Just before considering any bill, you should ask, is this constitutional? If the answer is no, you can't proceed. I'm just aghast that this has even gone this far. We're adequately regulated by the states and counties. You heard providers on the other side, some paid by the unions, that they have talking about the things they do in their child cares. I don't understand what a union can offer them because they talk about the quality of their child cares, developmentally appropriate practices, all kinds of things you can look up in a book about education in the glossary. But I think it's really important to understand that a union is not going to offer us any things. And only 9 of those 16 states that they keep citing are still unionized because most providers spoke out against it. And even some Democrats who might have voted for it realized that they were empty promises by the unions and didn't offer benefits for the providers. So I urge our legislators to look up the facts from other states instead of listening to my opinions and the opinions from the unions. Instead of listening to me say things are facts, go look them up for yourselves because the information is not hard to find. Thank you.
Thank you. There's 10 minutes left, so...
My name is Natalie Morales, and I'm a licensed family child care provider in Bloomington and have been a professional in the field of early childhood education for 25 years. I hold a Minnesota teacher's license and was a classroom teacher and school administrator for many years. I care deeply about the quality of care and early education available to young children and their families in Minnesota. I oppose HF 950. And urge you to do the same for the sake of family child care providers and our state's children and families. For Minnesota, a state that wants to improve quality care and early learning programs in order to reduce the current achievement gap, unionization is a serious step in the wrong direction. Providers like me that are able to maintain capacity due to the quality of care we provide do not rely on or need to accept families receiving child care assistance. I provide care to families in CCAP, but if required to join a union in order to do that, I, like many others, will no longer accept families in CCAP. Sadly, that will limit the options available to families that need them the most. I do not want to be an employee of the state. I did not apply for a government job. I chose to be a small business owner with an 11-hour workday, plus related responsibilities that require me and my family to make additional sacrifices. I love what I do, and I know that I make a positive difference in the lives of young children and their families. Many families are looking specifically for faith-based family child care. As an employee of the state, I do not see my right to continue offering a faith-based family child care being protected. I'm accredited by the National Association for Family Child Care and will be participating in Parent Aware. I hold memberships in professional organizations that support best practices in child care.
I have both a bachelor's and a master's degree in early childhood education. I do not want unlicensed providers to be able to impact issues of all licensed providers through exclusive representation. I believe that the professional organizations and other programs like ParentAware currently offer what the union promises to do. We can raise the profession of family child care by improving the quality of care we provide. Educating providers, parents, community, and legislators is the way to do that, not with bullying from a union. An increase in my cost of doing child care because of union dues or fair share fees will most certainly directly impact the rates that I charge parents. Please oppose HF 950.
Thank you. There's only about 7 minutes left, so I hope you think of the people behind you when you're
yes.
going on.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Okay, sorry. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jennifer Parrish, and I'm a licensed family child care provider in Rochester. This bill will actually take away the rights of thousands of small businesses across the state, not give us rights. We will lose the right to choose who, if anyone, represents us, the right to choose whether or not to pay hundreds of dollars per year in dues or fees, the right to have a seat at the table when negotiations are made with the state on issues that will impact our profession. These are rights that all licensed family child care providers deserve to keep, and each one of these rights is either taken away or diminished with this bill. This alone is reason enough to vote no. Right now, door knockers are knocking on the doors of family child care providers who do not have the protection of state labor law because this bill has not passed giving them that protection. There's no place for them to file complaints or turn to when unethical tactics are used, like I experienced many years ago when a door knocker came to my home. Nothing in this bill protects providers during the organizing process, and this is another reason to vote no on this bill. A recent study revealed that over 40% of the providers in Minnesota belong to professional child care associations, yet only 3% identify themselves as union members. There is no support for this amongst the licensed family child care profession. This is why unlicensed caregivers have been included in the process. The union cannot win a vote without them. Ensuring a union victory is not a good enough reason to combine a group of professional businesses with those who do not have the same rules, regulations, requirements, and concerns. This bill creates an inappropriate labor unit, and this is another reason to vote no on this bill. This bill will significantly limit options for families using the Child Care Assistance Program. It will raise the cost of child care. It will limit a large portion of grant money to those willing to pay dues and fees. These are all reasons to vote no for this bill. Thank you.
Cindy Cunningham, I'm there are packets that are being handed out. I just brought paper for you to read. And my biggest urge is please read the paperwork. Please study this bill carefully. The facts of what's happened in other states and everything is within the file folder. The biggest part of this bill is that you are creating and defining a bargaining unit. You are taking on that awesome position. If you walked into this room and if we weren't sitting on other sides of this room, you would not know who we were in this bargaining unit. In fact, it is a confidentiality issue if I would disclose that I have families on CCAP. So to combine us somehow in a bargaining unit when we don't really know, nor should we know who we are with each other, is terribly wrong. I'm going to do a little caveat. One is I'm going to thank you for passing amendments to House File 220. That was my work with DHS. So I thank you for working with the legislators who have included that. That was a safe sleep. You passed it through. Thank you. It will help providers. That was my voice, personal voice. I have a son who is going to deployment soon in the Marines. I had his picture with me. I won't do that. His words at Christmas were, he feels proudly that he's fighting for the freedom. You guys are taking away my freedom, giving it to the power of organization. You have an awesome responsibility to decide which is it. Is the power to organize stronger than my ability to freely associate, freely have business, and to choose who I'm going to have a business contract with? Read the material. I left out page 5. I will email it back. I apologize. I'm not a secretary, and with 10 kids, it's hard to get it all printed out.
Thank you.
Great job.
Hello, Chairman and Committee. My name is Cindy Bills. I'm a licensed family child care provider in Rosemont. Along with my husband, I've built and operate a thriving child care business in our home for the past 9 years, providing care to 11 families, and I currently have 3 employees. I'm just going to make one point. I manage my child care to be a quality program. And upon meeting me and my program, a family can choose to have their child come to me or choose to go somewhere else. The way the union is doing business right now is forcing themselves into our home, running to the government to support their industry. If the union had representation right now that I felt would be an asset to my business, I could join. We currently have that option because as of today, I still have that choice. We already have the right and the freedom to choose to join a union if we choose to do. The union is not meant for licensed family child care providers who are independent, self-employed business owners. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Vicki Reese. I'm a provider in St. Paul for 20 years, and I oppose the organization of a union for the simple fact is they're only providing us one thing so far. We've asked and asked and asked, what can you do for us? I applaud the fact that they're doing quality care. We all are. We are all teaching our children. We're all sending our kids to school educated with their alphabet and writing and spelling. But it doesn't take a union to make that happen. It makes quality, qualified people, mothers, fathers, providers, community. It takes everybody. It takes the village. That's why my name is Vicki's Village. And I also just want to explain that this a little tutorial on CCAP. CCAP is a social service to families. It's a family benefit. It is not a child care benefit. It has nothing to do with me or my business except for the fact when a family comes and they want to have me take care of their children and they have a CCAP or a subsidy agreement with the state, I can agree to take them or not. When my contract rate is higher than the CCAP that they get in subsidy, I don't lose that money. One of the legislators I talked to last year, he said, but wouldn't you make more money if you took CCAP and it got raised? I said, no, I wouldn't, because my contract rate is set. The subsidy is whatever is allowed to the parent, and the difference has to come as a copay from the parent. So essentially, the only way I could raise my income is by taking more CCAP families. If you raise the eligibility or the funding for CCAP, that would obviously be a benefit. But that's a social service. That's a social service welfare issue, not a child care issue. So that's my one little comment I have. Okay. I love doing what I do. I'm a mom and a daycare provider, and I'm just going to stop there.
Next, come on up quickly. And while she's coming up, would the people that testified kind of be up there for questions so that if somebody asks you a question, we don't have to wait 3 minutes for you to come up? Okay, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Susan Johnson, and I've been doing licensed in-home care for 24 years. And I am opposed to the union. I feel we are already free to join the union. So many of these people have stated their cases, and I really echo their cases, so I don't think I have that much more to say. If this does go through, I want clearly in writing assurances that those opposed will not or never have to join or pay fair share or be penalized in any way. I feel that we can be organized without being unionized. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'll give each of you a minute. You're over about 4 minutes now, but that's fine.
I'll be very brief. Mr. Chair and Committee, my name is Carrie Fairclough. I'm from Rochester, Minnesota. I've been a licensed family child care provider for about 18 years. Appreciate this opportunity to speak. I had a substitute caregiver this afternoon, so I was able to get up here. And yesterday I had to explain to the kids where I was going, what I was doing, that I needed a substitute. And gave them a very broad, quick overview of government, starting with the federal level, and remembering the election was a big thing with the kids, and the president bringing it down to our state level, and the governor, and our senators and representatives here. So today, I quickly asked the kids if they remember where I was going. Well, yes, I'm going up to the world of Barack Obama, which I thought was a good point of referencing the government, and that they knew I was coming, that I had the opportunity to say that I disagree with something that would affect my job. So I thought, that even though they're little people, they do get it if you give them the chance. So I just briefly want to comment about Parent Aware. It has recently arrived in Olmsted County, and I am currently participating in it. And so that's a quality rating system that has the potential to not only elevate
the quality of child care in our communities, but also the access of quality care for lower-income families. So, you know, I don't really fully understand the potential of what this could be. A lot of it, you know, can happen in the legislative session. But there could be scholarship funds available for families in 3- and 4-star level programs. So it's also possible that they could get a higher CCAP reimbursement rate, providers that are 3- and 4-star levels. So those scholarship dollars might also bridge a difference between CCAP and the child care program's tuition, or offer additional funding opportunities for families that are currently on the CCAP waiting list. So there is some, you know, hopeful things, you know, that are out there. One of my big concerns is how this would affect me later as a going through Parent Aware and these great opportunities for lower income families. If they would then want to come and enroll in my program, I would be faced with that choice of, do I want to deal with the union and dues or paying fair share, or am I going to then not work with a family that maybe had this great opportunity and I strive to offer that level of care for them? Thanks. So I think we're going to lose options for families. Thank you.
Thank you. And the last testifier.
Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for hearing my testimony. My name is Sean Stewart. I'm a licensed child care provider. Being a licensed child care provider means that I pay for a license, I meet training requirements set by our state, I follow DH Rule 2 regulations, I allow inspectors and licensors in my home, I follow federal food program regulations to provide nutritional meals to children in my care. Everyone living in my home does a background security check. I offer a curriculum to ensure children are kindergarten ready and that they're set up for success. This is what a licensed child care provider is. This bill proposes to unionize not only licensed providers that care for CCAP families, but also caregivers that are family, friends, or neighbors to these children. These are not licensed and do not follow any of the regulations, trainings, nutritional safety inspections, or background checks. They're not licensed providers, should not be considered providers, but rather a caregiver for these children. Half of the children on CCAP are being cared for by caregivers rather than providers. A union will serve caregivers no purpose since they are not regulated, and therefore any changes the union may attempt to change through DHS will not affect them. It will, however, affect all licensed providers. It was suggested that if providers do not want the union, they simply do not take CCAP families. I believe that's exactly what will happen. Over the past 8 years of attempting to organize the approximate 11,000 providers, only 57 have voluntarily signed up as a due-paying member of the union, and that fact comes from the AFSCME newsletter. I believe an overwhelming majority of providers will not take CCAP families to avoid the union and the dues. How will this benefit this low-income, higher-risk group of children? How is unionizing child caregivers that are not regulated going to help any children? If I can avoid being forced into a union, I will refuse to take CCAP families. If union dues are forced upon my business, I will likely increase my fees to my families to cover additional costs, and I will strongly consider closing my child care. I believe I have a right to bargain for myself. I retain my vote and independence for issues that are important to me and for my families and my care. Any provider that wants to be a part of this union can already join it. Legislation is not necessary. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Okay, now we'll have questions, and what we'll do is each person that gets called on the committee will have one question from one side and then one from the other so that we try and balance it off fairly. And there's Representative Myers first.
Mr. Chair, I have a couple statements first, and then I will give my one question. I want to express my objection to the rush manner in which this very important issue is going through this committee, first of all. Second, Mr. Chair, I would like to request a roll call on House File 950 as amended. And I would like to draw the attention of both the members and the public of the 19 written testimonies that are in your folder, all in objection to House File 950. And for my question, Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, how will unionization increase affordability?
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair, and Representative Myra. Sorry, Joe. It's anyway. It's not going to have effect one way or the other on the affordability of the care. The prices that the providers charge is not going to change one bit, because they're going to set that. That's a contract between the providers and the people they take care of. Or actually the parents of the people they take care of.
Okay, Representative.
Mr. Chair, can I have my name back on the bottom of the list?
Okay. Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would also like to echo the viewpoints of my esteemed representative here. I think we're rushing through this. Let's say, as in the words of the immortal Vice President Joe Biden, this is a big deal. And I think we need to take our time on it. I think it's a law or a bill that if it gets passed, it will be permanent, and it will affect a lot of families in our state. And I hope we don't continue to rush through the bill. There are a lot of questions we all want to ask. One question on this important bill just won't suffice. So I would hope you would take that advice, and we can slow down and do this right, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your advice, Representative Barrett. This is not rushing through a bill. I've been here 16, 17 years now, and this is not rushing through a bill. Most bills, even very controversial ones, don't get a full hour and a half. So,
well, the fact that we only have one question is rushing through a bill, but let me ask my question. If I could have the gentleman, I don't know your name, sir, the gentleman from, I think you were the first one up on the, yes, if you could come up here as well. And then, Ms. Stewart, would you mind coming up as well? Matt, Mr. Chair, if you could give me one extra question. What is your name, sir? I forget your name.
My name is Eric Leto.
Leto?
Yes.
Leto. Mr. Leto, could you talk to Ms. Stewart for a minute and just tell her, if she does not want to be a part of the union, but she wants to take CCAP families, could you explain to her what her responsibility will be under this bill, either in union dues or fair share?
Representative Barrett, you cannot ask one testifier to ask another testifier.
Sir?
So you can ask him his opinion, but you cannot ask him to talk to the
let
other
me, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. If I could restate the question. Sir, with Ms. Stewart right next to you, could you explain to me what her role would be if she decides to take CCAP families, but she doesn't want to join the union? What would her responsibility be to the union in that scenario?
Mr. Leto.
Chair Mallory, Representative Barrett, if I'm understanding the question right, that Representative Barrett has, you're asking what the responsibility would be of the provider if they're against the union?
Representative Barrett, just clarify.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It has nothing to do with being for or against the union. It has everything to do with whether she wants to be a part of the union, and whether if she wants to take CCAP families, but she doesn't want to join the union, what would her role be? What would her responsibility be under this bill if it becomes a law?
Mr. Leto.
Chair Mallory, Representative Barrett, her responsibility is already defined and out in Rule 2, which the testifier had reference to. She has a variety of responsibilities that are defined in state statutes that she must do to provide the quality care and through inspection and licensing that is established.
If I could, Chair Mallory, I'm referring to this bill in particular with my question.
Chair Mallory.
Representative Nelson.
I believe what Representative Barrett is getting after is talking about dues, because that's the question he asked. Is
excuse me, Mr. Chair. I'm referring to every part of this bill, including dues, but not limited to dues.
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chairman. In the parts of the bill that, and like I said, the parts of that, I heard a question about the dues, and if I could answer my answer without being interrupted, would be great. But with the dues, it's already in statute. They'd be considered a union. If the union vote gets passed, and all these members, whether they're for or against it, will have the opportunity to vote whether they want a union or not. And if it does get passed, then the dues that will be set by the people that joined the union, and the statutes that we currently have in the books state that they have fair share dues that are for the people that choose not to be a member, but they pay their fair share for the operating costs of it. And those can be set in law no higher than 85% of what the dues are. Again, that's no higher than 85%. They can be set much lower than that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you could add me to the end of the list as well, I would appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I just think it's kind of comical that we have, you know, the three union people sitting next to Mr. Nelson while, you know, all the other, the non-union providers need to sit down. I mean, I'm glad that you guys don't feel threatened or anything, so way to go. But I do have a question on subdivision, which would be, I believe the new number would be 7 on severability. It says, should any part of this act be declared invalid or unenforceable, or the enforcement or compliance with it is suspended, restrained, or barred, either by the state or by the final judgment of a court of competent jurisdiction, the remainder of this act shall remain in full force and effect. I find that a little odd that you add a severability context in here. So could you explain why you included it, and what provisions do you think would be struck down?
Representative Nelson.
Chair Mullery and Representative Franson. A lot of legislation we pass, and I think Mr. Shepherd could probably answer this better than I could, but most legislation that we passed has a severability clause in it, so that if parts of the law that we pass, somebody were to challenge them and they were to get thrown out by the courts, the rest of the law can stand on its own. And that's pretty standard in most legislation we pass, but I think Mr. Shepherd can answer that, to maybe add to that if I didn't say it correctly.
I did want to... The daycare providers over there, you can sit in the chairs up there if you want. Oh, either way. I prefer there. You're used to it, probably.
Our clientele are 3 foot tall.
And Mr. Chair, in my working life, I'm used to sitting on the floor also, because we normally did have chairs on the job sites I worked on. So,
Representative Lane.
Oh, Mr. Chair, can I go to the bottom of the pile, please?
Okay,
thanks.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nelson, as I looked over the delete all and then the amendment that you put into your, to get your bill in the order that you actually wanted it, I see that there isn't authorization cards in the bill, that in fact it's a mail ballot, and I see that there's no indication of anybody being a state employee, that's been deleted. Is this correct?
Representative Nelson.
Representative Mullery. And Representative Lane, they're state employees, yes, that's been deleted, but the normal procedure, and that's already in statute, of how you hold an organization or organizational drive, and that's what this would be, the union would be doing, and the people that want to form a union would be doing, is they go out and get authorization cards signed by the people that want to be in the union. And when they get a certain level of authorization cards signed, and in statute that's 30% for the normal process, then they can go and ask for an election. And then they hold the election, and the election that is stated in here, because it's a statewide union, all corners of the state, they're holding a mail ballot. And that's permissible by our current Pell Rule statutes. And that's what would determine how the election is done. And that's standard. That standard procedure, if your teachers, when the teachers organize, that standard procedure, if it's nurses, any other corporation, any private sector corporation, it's the same standard procedure that's held. The only difference is that we're stating a mail-in ballot because the vastness of the state of the people, there's not a central location that they can all go to hold a in-person vote.
Representative Myra.
Oh, I
see.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nelson, what are the main concerns that unionization will address?
Representative Nelson.
The main concerns that have been expressed to me by the people that are wishing to join the union is they want to get better reimbursement from the state. They want to get access to training and better training. And They want to make this a profession that they can afford to stay in and not have to step out of and go back to work. And what some people may say is a real job. I won't use that. We wouldn't use that term, but some people tell them you need to get a real job. These people want to be able to be able to make a living in the profession that they've chosen.
Thank you, Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If Ms. Morose could come back up to the testifying table. Ms. Morose, thank you. And I forgot to mention to everyone, both those that want union and not, thank you for what you do. I had two daughters in child care as well for many years, and you guys do yeoman's work, and I appreciate everyone who takes care of our children every day. So thank you to everyone. Ms. Morose, could you just comment on what Representative Nelson said and whether you agree with his thoughts or whether you think that maybe you don't agree? If you could just share with us your thoughts on that.
Ms. Morose?
I do disagree. I think a lot of the things that, as far as training or being able to provide quality care and get support, those are available to us right now. I went through accreditation, and right now I believe I'm only one of seven in 11,000 providers that are accredited, and that's available to us. It's a process that helps us improve what we do. Parent Aware is another one that's been mentioned. There are trainings that are available through Think Small, through neighborhood groups, through all kinds of things. And I don't understand how having to pay union dues or fair share, if that makes our expenses go up, we're going to charge our parents. That's how we do business. Anyone does business.
Thank you. Representative Franzen.
Oh, thank you. Well, this is moving fast, isn't it? I just want to read, I've got a lot of emails in the last few weeks from people all opposed. I have not received one email from somebody saying, yes, indeed, I want the union to represent me. So I'm just going to read a few of them because maybe some of you on the other side of the aisle haven't had a chance to read them.
Hanson, we're in a question period.
This will get to a question. Trust me, Mr. Chair, I've got a question.
Go ahead with your question.
Thank you.
But do not read.
So you don't want me to read? Because some of them are really great.
I've gotten a lot the other way too. So
this
you
one
have a question.
Well, what disturbs me is I have an email here that says, "Mary Franzen, my livelihood is in your hands." That's very sad. Very sad that it's come to this.
Do you have a
question? Yes, Mr. Nelson. Home child care providers aren't employees, but small business owners, and many are actually employers. So why should they be unionized? And I have a follow-up for that.
Representative Nelson.
Chair Mullery and Representative Franzen, what this bill does is it gives the people that are child care providers that wish to join a union and wish to form a union the ability to do that through the normal process, which is getting cards signed and getting to an election. And when it gets to an election, that's what we're giving these people the right to do, to be able to vote and choose. There's a lot of great people that are saying, don't pass this legislation. We don't want to have anyone else to be able to vote because we don't want to be able to vote. We don't want to be part of a union, so we don't want anyone else to be part of a union. What this bill does is it gives the people that right now want the opportunity to form a union the ability to try to do that. And it'll go through the normal process where they collect the cards, get the authorization signatures, and then get to an election. And then once the election is, then it'll determine whether there's a union or not. And that everyone will have their choice, and everyone will be able to vote. And that's what this is about, giving the people freedom and the right to vote.
Representative.
Follow-up question.
No.
Just a follow-up to that, sir. Just really quick.
Franzen, you don't get another question. Representative Creason.
Bottom line.
Creason has, you are, I've already put you, on the list. Representative Creason hasn't had a question yet. And then Representative Howe, who I think hasn't had a question.
Thank you, Chair Mallory. And thank you to all the testifiers, and thank you to you, Representative Nelson. I wouldn't switch places with you. But it's very important. And to that, and is it Ms. Morose?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Our job here is to really get to the will of what the most people want. And we've heard a lot of information, and I just want to sort through it and see if, in fact, what we're hearing is accurate and what might actually happen in the marketplace. And one question that I would have is, we heard the comment, and I'd like to give Representative Nelson a chance to clarify it and to get a response, that prices wouldn't change one bit. Do you believe that's actually the case? Because I understand the intention, but I'd also like to hear from a couple of daycare providers who, or at least Ms. Marosa, would costs going up, do you normally eat those costs, or do they get passed on? Just tell me where you're at on that.
Ms.
Marosa? When my costs go up, when my cost of groceries go up, when my costs for materials I purchase for the children go up, when just like any business, my costs go up. It's an increase my parents take. I do what I can to keep it down, but this is also my livelihood.
Representative.
And I just wanted Representative Nelson to respond as well. I want to be fair.
Representative Crescia, if you look in the bill and the delete all amendment on page 3.5 to 3.9, where it says subdivision 7 rights, nothing in this section shall be construed to interfere with, one, the parental rights to select or deselect family care, child care providers, or the ability of family child care providers to establish the rates that they charge to parents. So you can say this is going to raise rates, or you can say the rates are going to go down. It's up to the individual child care providers and the contract that they make with their parents as to what the rates will be.
Thank you. Representative Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And going down that same line, and I hate to go down that line, but yep. Representative Nelson, but that's where I got to go. When we discussed that, because when you said why do they need a union, you spoke to the fact that they want to stay as a child care provider and they want to earn a livable wage so they don't have to go find another profession. With that tells me, that indicates to me, that they want to earn more than what they're currently making. If they don't raise rates, that I would have to believe that has to come through the reimbursement of the state through the, is it the CCAP?
CCAP, yeah.
The taxpayers.
What prevents the legislature right now from representing these people and raising the CCAP rate? Can we do that, or do we need union to negotiate that?
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Howe. And you're right there. There's nothing that stops us from raising those rates, but we haven't. And the people that are trying to have joined together and are trying to form a union have come to us and asked us to be able to have that right to vote, to do that. But they're coming together because they feel that we haven't done our job of raising those rates. If that's what you're saying, why we haven't done that? Well, we haven't done that. And they want to join together because the collective voice is stronger and louder than they're being heard, and they're trying to express that.
Okay, one more question, Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So regarding that, let me just follow up on that, if you could, Representative Nelson. So we have right now in our state, we have one party in control of all three branches of the legislature and executive branch. Why would the unionization of child care workers change the current scenario where we have an ability to affect legislation currently?
Representative Nelson.
I don't know. It's some of it's the budget. Some of it's just the stuff that goes on. I mean, the last biennium there was a pay cut, or there was for 2.5% for unlicensed and 14% for licensed daycare. That was done to them, and again, that's why these people are coming forward, the ones that want to be able to have the right to go and form a union, and that's all they're doing. They want the right to be able to try and do this, and that's what we're trying to do then with this bill, is give them the right to organize and get to a vote, and then once there's a vote, that's what will happen. They vote, if the majority of the daycare providers vote to have a union, there'll be a union. If the majority of them vote not to have a union, there won't be a union.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we've got to go to the amendments. We actually only have 5 minutes left, so let's start. And Representative Franson, I'm told that these are your amendments?
Yes, sir, they are.
Is it correct you want the A18 first?
Yes, I have an A11. And the A18, A19, and A20.
Well, in the order of which you want first, because we only have 5 minutes. So
the A11 first, sir.
Okay. Representative Franson moves the A11 amendment, which would delete the severability clause. Is that correct?
That is correct. And I'd like a roll call, please.
Okay. Representative, that will probably use up all the rest of the time, but Representative Franson requests a roll call.
I'm sure we can vote fast.
And Mr. Chair, I oppose the amendment.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Representative Nelson, I apologize that I thought that you had already spoken against that. So go ahead.
Muller.
No.
Lane.
No.
Myra?
Yes.
Barrett?
Yes.
Reiner?
No.
Franson?
Yes.
Howe?
Yes.
Kreisha?
Yes.
Moline?
No.
Moran?
No.
Radinovich? Winkler?
No.
6-5.
Okay. The amendment's defeated. Next one.
Okay, I move the A18, Mr. Chair.
Representative Moran moves the.
And
Representative
like
Franson moves the A18 amendment. And do you want to?
Yep, roll call, please. Yep, this prohibits labor organization from coming on to the premise during the hours of 7 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Representative Nelson, do you want to reply?
Mr. Chair and members, I oppose the amendment. I think, again, as I said earlier, having conducted many organizing drives when I was a business agent for the Carpenters, we know better than to disrupt the business of the people we're trying to talk to, and that's not our intention, so I oppose the amendment.
Okay. Mr. Chair, this amendment comes through many, many testimony from the providers saying that this indeed has been a hassle. Some of the providers have been harassed. I've got numerous emails on this issue, so I do request a yay vote on this. Thank you.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to point out to Representative Franson that your amendment is certainly unconstitutional. You cannot prevent a homeowner from letting somebody come to their home.
True. Okay.
Then it can be severed.
Sorry. Representative Moline, sorry.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was just going to make the same point that Representative Franson is saying that a homeowner can't even give permission to somebody to come into their home.
These are child care.
Furthermore, I'm sorry, Representative Franson, but I guess I just had a question for you quick. What if the representative of a labor organization, I grew up in a union family, my mom was the, and she was active in her public employee union, so would she have been able to go and pick me up at daycare if she was a representative for a labor organization? What if a child care provider is married to a labor organization? How would that work under your amendment?
Representative Franson.
Well, obviously, your mom would be able to pick up the child because a provider cannot keep the children away from their parent. What this does is keeps the organization labor from harassing the providers during business hours from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. And if you ask the providers that are sitting on here, I'm sure that they would agree and appreciate this being adopted.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Franson, that's not what your amendment does. Your amendment prohibits representatives of labor organizations from going onto the premises of a child care provider, meaning that a parent who's a representative of a labor organization wouldn't be able to pick up their child, meaning that a child care provider wouldn't be able to be married.
Representative Moline, if your parent is not...
Representative Franson, you're not called on yet. You have to wait.
I'm just clarifying what her amendment says, but that's fine.
Representative Franson.
Well, obviously, Representative Moline, your mother would not be doing the business of the union at the child care provider's house. She would be picking you up to go home, not to be organizing child care providers at that time.
Okay. 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 All in favor of the
A-18? Roll call it.
Roll call.
Was it? Oh, mm-hmm. Okay. I didn't hear it. Okay, go ahead.
Muller?
No.
Lane?
No.
Myra?
Yes.
Barrett?
Yes.
Reiner?
No.
Franson?
Yes.
Howe?
Yes.
Kreisha?
Yes.
Moline?
No.
Moran?
No.
Absent. Winkler?
No.
Again, 6-5, nay.
The amendment fails. I'll allow one more amendment. We're over time, but I'll allow one more. So which one do you choose?
Let's see here. I guess I will move the, I think the A19 and the A20 are the same, it looks like. Well, no, I guess I'll just, I will move the, boy, decisions. I'll move the A20 amendment.
Okay. Representative Franson moves the A20 amendment, and would you just state?
Yeah, representatives of a labor organization are prohibited on the premises of family child care provider during the business hours of the provider unless the labor organization representative has had a completed criminal background check on file with the provider and the county in which the provider is located. And roll call that, please.
Okay. Representative Nelson?
I'm not in favor of the amendment.
Okay. That's succinct. Okay, go ahead.
Mullery?
No.
Lane?
No.
Myra?
Yes.
Barrett?
Yes.
Reiner?
No.
Franson?
Yes.
Howe?
Yes.
Kreisha?
Yes.
Maline?
No.
Moran?
No.
Radinovich absent. Winkler?
No.
6-5 nay.
The amendment fails. Representative Franson, I'm going to give you one because that was really quick.
Oh, you're going to give me one more question?
No, one more amendment.
Oh, one more amendment. Okay, my last one and my which one was that? A19. All right, then. This one is representatives of a labor organization are prohibited on the premises of a family child care provider during the hours of 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. until all children receiving child care are off the premises unless the labor organization representative has a completed background check on file with the provider in the county in which the provider is located. And I would love a roll call, please.
Representative Nelson?
This is quite similar to the one we just voted on, and I would again say no.
Okay. Did you call for roll call?
Yes, I did, sir.
Okay.
Mullery?
No.
Lane?
No.
Myra?
Yes.
Barrett?
Yes.
Reiner?
No.
Franson?
Yes.
Howe?
Yes.
Kreisha?
Yes.
Maline?
No.
Moran?
No.
Radinovich absent. Winkler?
No.
6-5 nay.
Okay. Representative Franson?
Do I get the last?
You're going to get another one.
Oh, that's all that we.
Okay.
That's all that we needed for here, sir. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, then,
Mr. Chair.
We're done.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Looking through the packet of amendments, and it wasn't one of mine. I guess who's got the 822 amendment? Because I kind of like that one.
Well, the 822 was that probably. One,
I was told was a representative Franson, but maybe she doesn't know her amendments.
Let's see.
Representative Nelson, if you want me to offer it, I will, if that's what you'd like.
No, I can offer the A22. That's fine.
And, Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that the CCAP money and the scholarship funds are two separate funds and differently, and we have no, the daycare providers that are trying to get the opportunity to form a union have no desire to go after those funds at all, so we have no problem with that amendment. And I'd accept it as a friendly amendment, but I'm not a member of the committee.
Should I?
Go ahead.
Okay, I'll offer the amendment, A22, and it's been described, so let's just vote. Does anybody, hopefully not a roll call on this one since everybody agrees? Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, Representative Winkler?
I don't agree with the amendment. I don't think it's a good idea. It's totally unenforceable. If a provider receives money, the money is green, and you can't distinguish between money received from one program or another versus somebody else about using this for due. So I think it's kind of silly, and I would oppose it.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Friends.
Well, we don't know if those funds, the union dues, would be coming previous to going into the provider's bank account, if the money would be skimmed from at the county level, or if it would be taken at the provider's paycheck. Right from the bank account.
No, nothing will be skimmed by the county level.
I'm talking about from the unions.
The unions don't do skimming. Representative Nelson, whichever way you want on this.
Like I said, Mr. Chair, I have no problems with it. I think, and if once money goes in a person's bank account from this, there's no way to get at this. And once the money goes in a person's personal bank account, it's their money. It's not the state's money or anybody else's money. So, again, I have no problem with this amendment. It's not in anybody's intention to go after the scholarship funds.
Oh, Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, I agree with Representative Winkler. This is saying that when you get some money from someplace and it goes into your bank account, now somehow or other you're not supposed to use that money for your life and your choices. This is ridiculous. This is getting into how a person is using their own bank account. It's unenforceable and it's unconstitutional.
Representative Nelson, if you want, I'll withdraw this amendment. You can take it up before, discuss it before the Labor Committee, whichever you want.
We can do that. It's your pleasure. It's your committee, sir.
I will withdraw the amendment then rather than argue at this time. We're quite a ways over. Okay, there's been a roll call on the bill, so.
We allowed to say Mr. Chair, can we all have our closing little statements to make?
We're already over about 10. Oh, well, we're 8 over. Just go ahead with the roll call.
Mr. Chair.
I think we understand the difference.
Well,
Representative Francis.
I know, but Mr. Chair, we're at the back of the call right now, and we got some wild time, and we're having some fun. So can we just make our closing statements regarding this issue before it moves on? I mean, some of us won't be on the Labor Committee.
Branson, I'll give you 2 minutes, and then I'll give Representative Nelson 2 minutes to be fair.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. It's very kind of you. So I just want to say that there's 11,000 child care providers out there with the collective voices who wish to remain independent. And CCAP Child Care Assistance Program, it's a wonderful program, but it's for the kids, not unions, not for AFSCME. CCAP is a benefit for families to shop for the child care of their choice. And, well, unfortunately, AFSCME plans on skimming some of that benefit money meant for the children of families in need so that union bosses can continue to get richer. Jennifer Munt, she's making $85,000. Lisa Thompson's $24,000. Eric Lato's making $104,000. And approximately, if this bill goes through.
I just, we don't normally, when testifiers come in here to give testimony, mm-hmm. as they have the right to do as Minnesota citizens, we normally don't go through their salary.
I realize it's
public information, but it's kind of tacky.
Representative Franzen,
I'm almost done. I know. Okay.
You're finished with that part, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Okay. If this bill were to go through, approximately $3 million a year would be taken out of the pockets of hardworking child care providers, which would mean less field trips, less arts and crafts, less new toys, and less activities. And there will be also fewer choices because unionization would create fewer choices for low-income parents. Many child care providers who do not want to be unionized or can't afford would be forced to reject the CCAP children. In turn, this will create fewer quality child care providers who will be able to accept children of hardworking low-income parents. There would be lower quality. Tax dollars meant for quality child care programs would be redirected into unions and partisan activities. If unionization occurs, child care assistance funds can be diverted to unions. And many providers that we heard today are concerned about the deduction of dues would require them to stop enrolling child care assistance families or to make drastic cuts to their child care programs, reducing the quality. And finally, my final point, higher costs. Child care providers will be forced to raise rates or shut down. Even those who opt out of joining the union will be forced to pay a fair share union due rate of 85%. Profit margins are already small for these providers, and requiring the payments of union dues will hit their bottom line and force them to possibly shut down or raise rates on working families. I just implore all of you today who are going to vote that you listen to your hearts and not by the endorsement of AFSCME. These are providers over here that wish to remain independent without union and to be able to provide the quality care that they are doing without the involvement of a third party in their business.
Okay, Representative Nelson, you have the last word.
Thank you, Chair Mullery, and thank you, members, for listening, and thank you for all the daycare providers that came to testify for and against this. I do value what you do. My wife used to do daycare. My sister didn't used to do daycare, and so I know the hard work that you guys all put in. Again, back to what I said in the first place. What this bill does, it allows interested people, interested parties that want to form a union, gives them the ability to organize and try and form a union. What it does not do, it does not form a union. It does not guarantee that a union will be formed, but it allows the people that wish to try and form a union to be able to go through the process of getting authorization cards signed and getting to an election and having the people that are in the daycare industry to be able to vote whether they want to be or don't want to be union. Thank you,
Representative
Chair.
Nelson. So the chair moves House File 950 be passed as amended and re-referred to the committee on, and our thanks to our CA, we now have the name of the committee, Labor, Workplace, and Regulated Industries. There will be a roll call. Go ahead.
Mullery?
Aye.
Lane?
Aye.
Myra?
No.
Barrett?
No.
Breinert?
Yes.
Franson?
No.
Howe?
No.
Kreisha?
No way.
Moline?
Yes.
Moran?
Yes.
Radinovich absent. Winkler?
Yes.
5 5.
Thank you. The bill passes, Representative Nelson, and the committee is adjourned.
Thank you, committee members.